Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. I hope everyone had a wonderful week, and I hope you all have a better weekend to follow. And let's see. I don't know. We have a great board tonight. We have a wonderful Friday night board, and then we have some Frisky Friday stuff coming up near the end. So, you know, carryovers are wonderful. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
Good. How about you?
Well, no sense complaining. It's Friday. You know, it was a decent day. It was a decent week. You know, a little rainy today, but, yeah, you know, I'm inside under the roof, so I'm thankful. You know, not everybody's so lucky, right? But,
absolutely.
Yeah, so you're doing all right. How about you? How you been?
Oh, it rained all bloody day yesterday, so I didn't have phone or internet. And today's actually a decent day. 75.
Wow, that's good. It's always nice to when you see the sun come out again the next day, you know. It keeps things straight. So we have a decent board tonight. It's kind of full. Looks good.
I see.
We should have some fun at the end or towards the end. So it'll be wonderful. I think lots of poetry to enjoy. And just so you know, we have two callers on the line, and I have someone else I have to pick up and find out who that is. So we have Weaver of Dreams. Hey, Kate, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful, thank you. Wonderful.
Hello.
Yeah, I said the same thing, but I wasn't going to tell you that. That you're wonderful.
Oh, you're so sweet. Lisa, hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, mate. How are you doing?
All right, not too badly.
Oh, I say, it's wonderful.
Wonderful. Wonderful, this is wonderful. That is very good. Very good. Okay, and our second caller, we have Laurent on the board. So, hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party. I guess right
thank
now
you, thank you. I will join in saying that Kate is indeed wonderful.
There you go.
All right, who's not been drinking tonight?
I have not. I have not, but there's a chance that it could start soon. Yes. And tell you what, give me 2 seconds. Hello, 570. Who's calling, please?
That's Plum Crazy.
Well,
Plum
hello, Plum.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I like that. Plum Crazy.
And do we know you by another name, Plum Crazy?
Well, you want my real name then?
Like the name that you... Go ahead.
My first name is Mary Alice. And I'm calling for my sister, Anina Appleby. But I also have a poem, maybe.
Okay, let me start over. Are you in, or is your sister in Late Night Poets?
My sister is. So
okay.
Can I only read her poem then?
What I need is I need for her poem to be put on the board for Late Night Poets. Or I need to be able to access her link. For her poem. So,
I have the of hers.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'm not to that point yet because we have a bunch of poetry on the board. So give me 2 minutes and I'll pull you into the green room and we'll figure it out. Okay?
Okay. Sure.
Okay, sounds good. Okay. Well, guys, I guess we're going to get this party started. And Rex, I'm going to ask you to start us off with a poem by Ben Hart called Hopeful Dystopia. So let me put it up.
Okie dokie.
And let's see if I can find the room. There it is. I found it. Okay. Whenever you're ready, Rex.
All right. Hopeful Dystopia by Ben Hart. The Bishop. Usually he takes midnight confessions in the corner booth of his neon diocese. But after the third round of patients, his mind has gone wandering, vestiges of old depressions, and his eyes are shooting up and down St. Peter Street. That forgetful fisherman, casting fish that could feed a village, back into the seas of sin for a shilling, and looking out across the urban abyss. Had he stood at Gethsemane, would he have been willing to take Iscariot's kiss? Returned to his body, dragged back across sidewalks drenched, card still in his hand, finding opposite him the shell of an old friend, entrenched in faux leather bench, stirring a cup of tepid chamomile tea, mourning the stream that bled to heat. Forgive me, Father, I don't mean to be a bother, but I had a dream about you and me, kissing in a garden. Jack of Spades. Sometimes I lie awake at night, thinking if God was a gangster, would pastors with razor blade crucifixes up around giving Glaswegian smiles to those behind on the prayers? Excuse me. The queen with the target tattoo. Not every pair of eyes are the entrance of something that was bold of us to call a temple. Free to move from cell to cell, but if you don't sit still, you can keep pretending it's not hell. You had shaved your head since we last met, but weren't looking gaunt. Though you had tattooed a bullseye over your ear and the words, straight shot, in a very bold font. And I said, it's good to see you, my dear, but you said it was not, and there was something you wanted. You wanted your bruises back, the ones my numbing hands had fought to earn, and in return you said you'd love me again. The divine apathy. If humanity was supposed to be the antidote of the divine apathy, then I don't think that's all she wrote. I still have hope. My heart still beats. The funniest thing, today, I saw a priest kissing God in the street. And boom. And Laurent, why don't we kick it off with you? What'd you think?
Hugely impressed by anything he's Ben has written lately. This one included Hopeful Dystopias. This really speaks at length in a fairly abstract way about trying to understand the world and spirituality, if you will. There's a number of phrases in here. Well, actually, let me start at the end. Today I saw a priest kissing God in the street. That image, I don't want to say it's haunting, but it really hit me. I sat thinking about it and what it meant. And then if humanity was supposed to be the antidote of the divine apathy, then I don't think that's all she wrote. That's all she wrote. All the way through there, there are little bits that speak of faith and understanding people. Another one is when pastors with the razor blade crucifixes go around giving God's sweet and smile to those behind on their prayers. I think this is really quite remarkable. This is more than good enough to be in any book of contemporary poetry, as a lot of his stuff is. And a real gold medal, yeah, absolutely. Phenomenal work.
Excellent. Thank you. And Kate, how about you?
Yes, I noticed all the different little points. Can you hear me okay?
Hello. Yeah.
Good. Sorry, I thought I was having trouble with my mic again. I thought this was fascinating, all the different aspects. And the last stanza, as usual, these last stanzas are wonderful. Yeah, it would be, it would be divine apathy, I suppose. But I like the utopia, dystopia part of it. Although he didn't use utopia, I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand why you would lie awake at night thinking God was a gangster. It doesn't surprise me in the slightest that people are getting rather worried because we're going to hell in a handbasket, as far as I'm concerned. And the Glaswegian smile, well, the razor blade Glaswegian smile, well, you know what that is, obviously. It's a very nasty thing to do to people. Yeah, I don't quite know where his head is going at the moment on this one. I have to reread it because he's very deep, our Ben. And the picture alone, look at that picture. You see the face in the clouds behind him?
Yeah.
The rainbow. The rainbow going right across his face, that's a Glasgow kiss for you. So, yes, I thought it was beautifully written, as usual. And I hope I can understand it more when I read it more, but it was very good.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. There is the question notes in this I like, especially that thought with near the end of that second stanza. Had he stood up, get that to me, would he have been willing to take Iscariot's kiss? And then that Jack of Spades notes. Sometimes I lay awake and I'm thinking if God was a gangster, would pastors with razor blade crucifixes go around giving Glaswegian smiles to those behind in their prayers? Oof, what a deep angle. It calls onto the question, especially with that first thought with the bishop. Usually he takes midnight confessions in the corner booth of his neon diocese, but after the third round of patience, his mind has gone wandering. So that almost hinted the idea of if you can't believe in the pulpit itself, how do you believe beyond that to what lies in heaven? And if you've got bishops and or priests walking that very fine line of where they're questioning their faith, then how do you lead your flock? And that thought with that forgetful fisherman casting fish that could feed a village back into the seas of sin for a shilling. That paints a hell of a scene, but it also hits on that easy idea. The best thing you can do, you can feed a village with the fish, but if you don't teach them how to fish, then they can't feed themselves. So the reliance on having one angle to another is stark, and you shouldn't always be relying on everybody to cure a problem that you yourself can actually attend to. rather than relying on God or the church or elected leaders. So this walks in a place where that divine apathy, that angle is we're letting off too much of our own responsibility and dumping into the laps of a few people, and then we're rather disgusted at how the equation turns out, which kind of paints the ugly picture. The apathetic are us as a whole because we've lost our way spiritually, divinely, mentally. So nicely done, Ben. Jean, are you back?
I am back. Did you miss me? Just
well,
kidding.
I thought I'd take it up so you have a bit an extra minute.
Yeah, well, I was trying to handle things off the air, so. Yes, I'll have to go back and read Ben's piece and leave a comment written because I didn't hear a word of it. So, yes. But Kate, I have the next poem for you to read, if you do not mind.
I do not mind at all. Thank you.
Very good. This one's by Darkened Auras, and it's called With Growth.
Okay. I'm refreshing, as I always do. And here we have it. Come to mama. Okay. With growth, cradled by flowers, a color burst springs. Her childhood was so happy. Now her teardrops make a splash like a hailstorm in the ocean. She has grown, and with her growth, so grew depression, tainting all her happy memories, fogging her mind. She embraces herself all alone. Closed her eyes, feeling the warm tears streak down her cheeks, and whimpered, "I just want to go back." End poem.
Great read. Kate, thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we leave it with you?
Because I wasn't ready. That's why. There's wonderful imagery in this, and there's a great brevity. You know, she's cradled by flowers. A color burst springs her childhood. She's so happy. You know, and then it goes into her teardrops, make a splash. The imagery was wonderful. It's a great image to top that all off. So, and I think it was nicely done to that image. But the end, I mean, that last line, "I just want to go back." You know, because so many things change as we get older. None of us can wait to get older when we're kids. Oh, yeah, when I get older. Then you get older and you think, "Damn, what was I thinking? You know, it wasn't so bad back then." So, there's all different angles on why it wasn't all that good today. But I think that this was just a wonderful piece and well expressed. And thank you so much, Darkened Auras, for sharing with us. I really like this one very much.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
Oh, this is a great piece. The image of the woman on the swing and her dress, it looks like it's dissolving into the water, and the flowers wound around it really allow the poet to express it in a way that she did so well. She's cradled by flowers. A color burst springs. Her childhood was so happy. The return to childhood for a person who's in depression, I guess it's something that seems normal. You want to go back to a much happier time. As the poet says, tainting all her happy memories, fogging her mind. The depression won't even allow that for her. And so she has to embrace herself all alone, whimpering, "I just want to go back." And it really pulls at the heartstrings. And it is relatable in many ways. And it makes a larger impact because it is so short. I think something that was longer and tried to do more might not have the impact that this particular one does. Excellent piece.
Nice. Thank you, Ron. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, this is beautiful. A lovely brevity. And that picture is wonderful. A lovely prompt. Of course, my mind immediately goes to hear somebody who was a mermaid and wants to go back to the sea because the body is dissolving into what looks like water to me. And that's just my slant on it. So ignore that. It's not that at all. But it is about it is about depression, isn't it, really? I mean, that must be horrible. I can't even imagine. If you don't have that tiny little tear of hope in you, if you don't have that at all, then it must be awful. You have nothing to look forward to even. Oh, my goodness me. I don't like that at all. Poor, poor person. And those last few lines, she embraces herself all alone, closed her eyes, feeling the warm tears streak down her cheeks, and whimpered, "I just want to go back." Oh, very well done. So much put into so few words. So thank you for sharing that with us, Darkendora. It was wonderful.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. And Plum, did you want to comment on this?
Plum actually dropped, right?
Oh, okay. I guess I got to go. I'm going to walk a little different because I think that swing is the optimum medium in the center. Everything else walks in the second and third stanza. She's cradled by flowers, a color burst springs. Her childhood was so happy. The swing would be the representation. But you look at the swing's links, that's intertwined with vines and flowers. So there's a bit of color in there. So that's the optimum note in the picture itself. Now, everything else hints at the depression and the darkness, which she hits into the that second stanza. So I'm thinking as she grew, because of the ending, something happened between, say, right around 17, 18, 19, which started off the depression angle. And when she got in a few more years in, as she grew a little older, a little more on her own, so to speak, things got a little darker, tainting all her happy memories, fogging her mind. She embraces herself all alone. She shut off alone, closed out of what once was probably family. So that thought is maybe a death in the family has taken her to a new level. And she offers up that, "I just want to go back," as a pleading note. So there's something missing in between those youthful years and now her adult years, which is weighing heavily and pushing a little bit further past those happy memories. So, nicely done, DA. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Gina.
That was the most excellent. Rex, I sent you a little nugget in your messages. And Laurent, if you'd be so kind as to read this next piece, I'd much appreciate it.
Sure.
Corpus A by Joseph Moon.
All right. To Che. Oh, Che, dearest Che, do thee still remember the time in thy short life here when radiance uprose from thy eyes and thy innocent smile, and thee walked with wondrous joy on the promise of becoming a New Year's bride? All day the candlelit rooms and the cul-de-sac round our condo ringing as thee 'twas singing, whilst thee bent to water fresh flowers, gaily adrift in thy glorious dreams, dreaming of our matrimonial future all the redolent month of May, day after day pondering on that. Sometimes taking a break from the poetry books I love and those tear-stained pages where I spent the best of carefree time, I'd lean from the balcony of our library toward the sound of thy angelic voice and the tender touch of thy fingers on the old oak organ. In awe, I'd stare up at the cloudless azure of the sky, out at our flowery garden and bird bath, where buds bloomed and wings fluttered to the sandy shore and sapphire sea. Only an immortal's tongue could tell the feelings exploding in my heart. What sweet secrets we had, what hopes, what spirit, Che. How fortune and two lovers' lives looked then. Now, when I ponder on all those promises, I'm sorrowfully stricken and bitter beyond comfort. I begin again to lament my misery. Oh, God, God, why can thee ne'er make true thy promises? Why must we tease and so deceive my own children? before December snow adorned the lawn. We were dying, dear dove. Struck and butchered by a blind cancer, you didn't see thy years blossom, nor ever felt thy heart melt under plummy praise of our unborn child or the heavenly light in her eyes. Ne'er did thy family spend time with thee coaching about motherhood. And soon, too, thy own sanguine wishes withered and died. My youth, too. The dream is cut off. Alas, how thee tattered from the misty hope, beyond confident of those dreary days. Is this the life we imagine? These the pleasures, the love, the journeys we two together talked and talked of? Is this what it means to be born human? To have faith in heartless gods. At the very first wind of winter, you wilted, poor dying rose, and with wedding band and pointed away to the stoic shadow of death and an uninscribed gray stone. End thought.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Katie, you got the kicker for this one. What do you think?
Oh, I think this is a beautiful piece of poetry and so well written. And it just flowed, but it flowed with so much pain and sorrow and loss. But, I mean, you have beautiful lines here. Where buds bloomed and wings fluttered to the sandy shore and sapphire sea, only an immortal's tongue could tell the feelings exploding in my heart. Beautiful, really is. And I can, you know, here we have another person who's questioning who it is that's actually deciding our fate, which way we go. Do we have free will? I love all that. That really interests me because you have faith on one hand, science on the other, and in the middle, doubt. And it's not a good way to be. So, yes, I really enjoyed this. Very clever. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And Jean, how about you? She got to unmute first.
Well, there you go. That brought me a second or three. I thought this was a wonderful song. Emotions were so very well expressed in the poem itself. And there's wonderful imagery. I thought it was a heart-wrenching write because there was so much pain in it, and it was well expressed. It wasn't, you know, I don't know, his use of language in this, the old language was wonderful, and he did it so well. It's as if it, you know, this has been floating around for eons, you know, for everyone to read. He definitely, it does have that flavor of the old poet. And, yes, just beautifully done. I think this is the longest piece I've ever seen by Joseph Moon. I don't think I've ever seen a piece like this. And usually it's maybe three of those stanzas, and that's it. This was outstanding. So wonderful job, Joe, and thanks for sharing with us. Good to see you back. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. All right, well, you got to read. How about you?
Really touched me. A lot of times when I really like a poem, I'm trying to figure out what is in the piece that I like. Is it the writing? Is it the imagery? Is it the tone of the piece? Is it the rhythm of the read? The way things are constructed? And all the way through this, I kept thinking that there are lines in here that spring right from the pen. Oh, I mean, stylized of Dylan Thomas. Just I could sense the musicality and the intonation and the rhythm. And now I'm not saying the imagery is perhaps the same. I mean, it's going to be different. We all write differently. But if, for instance, I'd lean from the balcony of our library toward the sound of thy angelic voice and a tender touch of thy fingers of the old oak organ, and oh, I'd stare up at the cloudless azure of the sky. The way Joseph writes it, I don't know, to me, it just is Bill and Thomas, that not any shoddy copying way. I'm just talking about the ability to grab the essence of Thomas's poetry with the imagery and the way the message is delivered. It just really, really a very impressive piece. And the lyrical quality is definitely to be appreciated.
Absolutely. Great comments, you guys. There's a note of purity and that of heart, even though it does walk on the back angle of being painful. Those first four stanzas walk very deliberately within happiness. And then at the end of that that fourth, fourth stanza, you get a note to where it really is going. Bitter beyond comfort, I begin again to lament my misery. And there is a note of lament in this, sorrow, the deep understanding. God, God, why can thee never make true thy promises? Why must we tease and so deceive thy own children? And from there you get a little bit more in-depth glimmer with that long stanza right there and the finishing note, the dying, because it hits on, where was it? Soon too my own sanguine wishes withered and died, my youth too, the dreams cut off. Alas, how thee tattered my misty hope, beloved confidant of those dreary days. Is this the life we imagined? Oof. And there's such a note of torn soul in those lines. And then you hit it. That last stanza it speaks for itself. But they also, I checked, this wasn't for a contest. This was more or less a free ride, I guess, or offering up one's thoughts. And he offers up in the AN, I apologize for my long-winded, never-received letter. So that, again, kind of hits the note of tearing at one's tear ducts and chest. All right, there's something deep and heart-wrenching in this piece itself. Nicely done, Joseph. Thank you.
Did you get the tidbit I sent you, Rex?
Yes.
Okay, good. Let me just look. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Curtains by Mystic Muse, and I'm going to give that one a read. And here we go. You drape me in window dressings of condescension, pulling blinds over eyes that still see rays of light peeking through. The shades you've drawn do not blot out the fact that the windows are still there. And your tapestries of lies and alibis are poorly sewn. My shutters are open and your valances grow pale and weathered. You blotted out the sun, yet forgot the lamps were still on, still lit. The final curtain shall soon fall, and I will pull the cord. You will be left alone, waiting in the wings of regret, and I shall open the sashes and smile as your shadow fades away. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
There's some great pieces that I... Here's another one that I really like. A Curtain is a great title. You drape me in window dressings of condescension, pulling blinds over eyes that still see rays of light peeking through. You know, when someone condescends to you as if you're a child, they're the adults. They're talking to you, trying to push you to something besides you, exert authority, whatever it is, despite the fact that they need their eyes that could still see hope. But you shut that hope out. The text of the piece continues in that vein with some great metaphors, the shades, the shutters, the final curtain, the wings of regret, the sashes, all of that harkens back to Curtains, the title of the piece, and really skillful the way it's done. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes, I thought it was brilliantly written. So good. I love the fact that we have here, it sounds like it's, it could be a parent, it could be a lover, either way, somebody who condescends to someone else and tells them what they should or should not believe and what they should or should not do is not great. It's not the best of relationships. So the blinds are pulled over the eye. But obviously, if you're a thinking human being, you know, you can blot out the future, but we know it's there. You can blot out the day, but we know it's there. So you'd have to be very strong, of course, to fight against that kind of relationship that's not good for you. So, yeah, and the fact that the tables are turning on the person who's doing the manipulating. So I like that a lot. There's fight coming back, and that's good. So, yes, very well written. I really enjoyed it. Told me a whole story in so few words. So thank you, Mystic Muse.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. And Jean, you got to read it. How about you? You've got to use things and do the phone.
Right. Absolutely. But I think that this is just a wonderful piece by Dave. And it's funny because I can't say, you know, great rhyme, great meter, you know, I can't do any of that. His metaphor throughout was wonderful, and his thoughts were so well expressed. I thought it had an excellent ending. You know, I went, you will be left alone, waiting in the wings of regret, and I shall open the sashes and smile as your shadow fades away. I just thought it was nice work. Very well done, Dave, and thanks for sharing it with us. Nice work.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. You're right on the manipulation angle there, Kate, that fourth stanza. And your tapestries of lies and alibis are poorly sewn. You haven't pulled the wolf far enough down to make him blind, because those next two stanzas sit on the note of, even they might be a little blurred in the moment, but the eyes are open to what's going on. My shutters are open and your balance will grow pale and weathered. Can't stand the crust of that which you've delivered. You blotted out the sun, yet forgot the lance is still lit. In other words, hey, I've still got some mentality left in my head. I like a note in the file curtain. And when I heard that curtains as the title, the only thing I could think of was the old cartoon favorite. It's Coitons, I think. Coitons. And then the back end of this it's him pulling those curtains open, and a nice kind of stage setting, leaving her in the wings of regret. I like that line. Nicely done, Dave. Thank you.
Okie doke. Well, Rex, this is going to bring me back to you, and this piece is called Crazy Days by S. Sharp. And I didn't see an audio for this, so hopefully there is none. Whenever you're ready. Oh, there is one, believe it or not. Wait, I have another one. Hang on. Dagnabbit. Dagnabbit. This one is much more cheerful. By title only.
You watched a lot of
Reflecting on Death. So, whenever you're ready.
All right. Ready to go. Where'd you put it?
Well, I thought I put it in the room. I could look again.
Right under S. Sharp's.
No. I don't see it there now. How crazy is that? There we go.
There it is.
I don't know where it is, but I hope they don't get upset finding it.
it just came through. Reflecting Upon Death by S. Sharp. The news hit like a paperboy throwing the morning post, crashing against the steel storm door, reverberating like the pulse of blood shooting through my veins. Morning coffee cooling in a cup long forgotten, like the past carried on hornet's wings, angle swarming, remembering the sting of absence, neglect. Death, conquistador of adverse feelings, posthumous olive branch, Gladiator's tomb, Spartacus at Mount Vesuvius, escape, buried under the ashes of time, forgiven, yes, forgotten, no, and poem. All right, well, let's start with you, Jean.
You cannot start with me because I'm over here trying to load the other audio.
All right, Laurent, so, how about you?
Scott has written a poem on death, a topic that I think is on everyone's mind at some point or another, or almost any day. And the way he introduces it, the news hit like the paper boy throwing the Morning Post crashing against the steel storm door. I used to be a paper boy, and when you take a paper with a good 30, 40, 50 pages, fold it right and throw it, the hell of a missile, and it will hit hard. So it struck me because I was familiar with it, reverberating like the pulse of blood shooting through my veins, morning coffee cooling in a cup long forgotten. It's a metaphor that works so well as you slide into death, which he calls conquistador of adverse feelings, which I think is a very clever way of phrasing that. The last three lines, Spartacus at Mount Vesuvius, escape, buried under the ashes of time, forgiven, yes, forgotten, no. Forgiven for being consumed, perhaps, unfortunate, but never forgotten. Fascinating place. And maybe one day we'll all be encased in some kind of lava. We'll be not forgotten, but remembered. I'm babbling. I realize that. Sorry. Great piece. Great piece.
Thank you, Ron. Katie, how about you?
Oh, here it's back. Sorry. Oh, my PC's got a will of its own, by golly. Yes, this is very well written. And the buzz of the hornets and the anger swarming, that is so insightful. I like it so much. It was a great metaphor. And I did, I did enjoy that last few lines. Spartacus at Mount Vesuvius, escape, buried under the ashes of time. Forgiven, yes, gotten, no. That is something that people find so hard to do. You can't forgive somebody. It's a polite thing to do, isn't it? It's the grown-up thing to do. But because you've been so hurt, you can't forget it. And that taints your life from there on in. It taints every reaction to every person you meet. So I reckon death's not a bad idea. That's just me, you know. I'm getting bored now, so. Never mind your olive branch. Just kick me out the door. I thought it was beautifully done. I thought it was very well written. So thank you for sharing.
Nice. I'm going to walk into that note with the paper boy. You read you hear a lot of people when they get on in age, they start reading the obits to see which of their friends have passed. I get this as this is that man hitting on that note, especially the last couple nights, like the past, carried on hornet's wings, anger swarming, remembering the sting of absence, neglect. There's two guys that have been on at each other, whether it's friendly banter or there's a little bit of misconstrued angles in between. Death, the conquistador of adverse feelings. Posthumous olive branch, the olive branch noting that he's still kicking, yet his adversary has passed on. Gladiator's tomb, Spartacus at Mount Vesuvius, escape, noting that his adversary has finally escaped the thralls of that which commingled between them. Forgiven, yes. Forgotten, no. It hits at that bottom angle. Yeah, I might end up winning because I live longer, but you end up winning because you got the last laugh in before you went. And though I forgive you, I can't forget the fact that I'm still here. And you passed on. I like that. Nicely done, Scott. All right, Jean, Rebecca to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, that's what I was saying.
Okay.
Okay, good. This next one I have for you is by Hope Soul, and it's called Waiting Isn't a Game. So whenever you're ready, my friend.
Okay, thank you. I saw it for a second, and it's bounced off again. Oh, my goodness me. I need a fisherman's net. Oh, got it. Yay. Sorry for that delay. So Waiting Isn't a Game by Hope Soul. Beautiful picture again. Your loose tobacco is still on my bedside dresser, on a brown rectangular tray. Dried out leaves shriveled from lack of moisture, alongside a vase of dead roses. Everything mourned your departure. This house feels less than in your absence. I miss you, so I wear your clothes. No longer does lace grace these hips, nor silk lay on this flesh, for your palms are far away from the peach orchids heavy showers cast dew on hands held mangoes. It's been days since I've coated my pucker with red cherries, for your lip stain is far from me. When the moon brings the cold and stars cast their vodka tonic waters, celestial bodies drink and weep, pouring gallons of salted rose on the open wounds in the marsh. Lilies of the valley kiss sweet apple crisp that refreshed the skin between my breasts, where you laid and I cradled your crown, sweet scents of beautiful feathered doves. All the night long I seek you in my bed, where your ghost greets me with a bouquet of purple ripe grapes, reminding me I've pressed your wine. I tangle with the shadow of a moor, keeping this heart beating, tormented but holding sugar-coated covenant promise that I'll hide under my tongue until the day you're back home again. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And Jean, we're going to start with you.
Hey, I can do it this time. I can really do this. I thought this was just a beautiful piece. So well put together and expressing so many beautiful images of love. You know, I love the one here. Lilies of the valley kiss sweet apple crisp that refreshed the skin between my breasts. We laid and I cradled your crown. Sweet sense of beautiful feathered buds. The way she worded everything throughout in this piece was just really beautiful and luxurious in a lot of ways. So, Hope, I think you did a wonderful, wonderful job here. Yeah, right up my alley.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. Laurent, how about you?
When the moon brings the cold, the stars cast their vodka tonic waters. Celestial bodies drink and weep, pouring gallons of salted rose on the open wounds of the marsh. Just a great metaphor that works so well in this poem of loss, of hiding for someone who is no longer there. And the beginning when it speaks about the loose tobacco, the brown rectangle tray, dried out leaves. Everything mourns your departure. That was well said, including the house, which feels less than in your absence. I like the way she said that. And the wearing of his clothes is something that is not unusual at all, because it really strongly reminds us of who that person was and their scent. Well, their style, if you will. It's not a happy a poem, but it doesn't make me unhappy. It is a refreshing look at a kind of sadness that the person has evidently learned to live with. You know, some things are stated in a certain tone. There's no real grieving. And the ending, of course, promises us a little bit of hope. Your coated covenant promise that I'll hide under my tongue until the day you're back home again. It's really well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes. I thought this was beautifully done. I love the undulating lines as they go down and round and out again. I love that effect. It's so good. But to love somebody to this point where they're leaving you even for a few days is like a torture. It must be awful. I mean, I don't think I'd ever want to love that deeply, because that sounds like an awful lot of hurt, and that must then taint the days ahead, because you've been going through this missing, hurting, caring, and then the person comes back and you're still feeling, you know, then you start to think, well, why did you leave me? You left me and I feel like this. It's not good. So, yeah, I thought it was very well done. It really gave me the idea of a love that was so deep that the mere mention of them leaving was that much of a torment. So, yes, beautifully done. I hope I read it correctly. I hope so, but it was very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kate. It's worded carefully. It gives you the idea, especially with that last line of the first stanza, everything mourns your departure, that there's a note of death in the air, so to speak. And it's been days since I've coated my pucker with red cherries, for your lips stain is far from me. There's such a note of almost grieving, and she carefully winds it in there to give you that note of how deep it's felt. And the idea of, was it a second last stanza, lilies of the valley kiss sweet apple crisp, the third. When the moon brings the cold, the stars cast their vodka tonic waters, celestial bodies drink and weep, pouring gallons of salted rose on the open wounds in the marsh. That was walking in the deep note of almost depression. And then that last, very last line walks the whole thing. It's carefully edged out so you get all of those feelings just so that on the back end, you know something more is coming, that I'll hide under my tongue until the day you're back home again. So there's promise at the bottom end, while there's such a heavy note to loss in the rest, which is quite well done there, Hope. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Jean, back on you.
It really was a gorgeous piece. Laurent, I have the next piece up for you. This is called Rain Not Thunder by Jack Tonkovich. Whenever you're ready. Laurent, are you on mute?
Yes, I was. Thank you so much. Rain Not Thunder. Rumi wrote, "It is rain that grows flowers, not thunder. I buzz why folks are so loud. They shout and scream, stomp their tiny feet, shake and shimmy, hold breath and turn blue. So slow down, y'all. Take a chill pill. And jello fell. Listen to mice scampering through green grass. Hear fish swimming, earthworms calling, babies sleeping. Or you blow a gasket and wind up in a casket vest." End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Katie, what do you think?
Well, I think that's very good advice. Yes. Take a chill pill. There are some people who can cope and some people who can't. And so, yes, it is rain that grows flowers, not thunder. Exactly. We need that. We need the silence of the water, the raindrops. And it wakes up the mice. I don't like waking up mice. Scampering through green grass. Oh, they're okay. They're those outside mice. That's fine. Before you blow a gasket and wind up in a casket basket. Oh, yes. So well done. It's got a light-hearted feel to it about something that, you know, is quite serious. So, yes, I enjoyed it a lot. I think it a lovely slant on, you know, don't get yourself in a tizzy. Just wake up and enjoy it. So thank you for sharing, Jack.
Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
You know, that this was a good piece by Jack, and I thought it was a great take on the prompt. You know, that it is rain that grows flowers, not thunder. All that loud, you know, banter and racing and, you know, just all the noise in life, the noise. Noise is everything. Doesn't make things, it just doesn't weave something soft. You know, it creates chaos. It creates a lot of things, but it just doesn't grow all the beautiful things that we all would like. And I think that it was just well expressed in here. You know, it's better for us to all just slow the pace, you know, and you know, take it easy. You know, it's going to rain, but we don't need to cause all the noise that goes with that. So I think that Jack did a great job. So thank you for sharing, Jack, as always.
Nice, Jean. All right, Laurent, you got to read. What about you?
The loud voices, the ones that shout and scream, often have very little to say. It's just volume. So the ones that slow down, as he says, who have taken a chill pill and are able to listen are the ones who can discern and therefore offer sage advice if need be. It is much better to be quiet and methodical at times as opposed to being loud and braggadocio, et cetera, et cetera. It's a nice metaphor. I enjoyed the title, Rain Not Thunder. Exactly. Very good piece.
Thank you, Ron. I like that, the quote he ran off and the very first line, because it is rain that grows flowers and not thunder. But the idea is he's taken this from the perspective of a bee, which is the one who pollinates the flower. So the idea of why folks are so loud, they shout and scream, and that the antics go with stomp feet, shapes, and all breaths on blue. The idea of slow down, y'all, take a chill pill and jello pill. I like this in the middle right here. Listen to mice scampering through the green grass. Hear fish swimming, earthworms crawling, babies sleeping. There's a nice quiet note to that. People have forgotten how to live without noise and to listen in on nature and what it offers up to you. Thereby, you get that note to actually calming oneself, reducing the heartbeats, reducing the elevated tempo of the pulse, and also lower the blood pressure so you're not boiling over. It's a clever piece there, Jack. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. Where about the two?
Okie dokie. Here we go. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Potent Possession by Stellina. And I have an audio for it. So here we go.
Deeply into my veins. passion, seeking to destroy me, but all the time craving my cruel caress. Our dance in the moonlight is a waltz of bloody ecstasy, an aphrodisiac to my desire.
A good vampire story, by golly, and this is it, taken from this of the older, the original, the more original story of Dracula and Mina. I thought it was beautiful, as always, beautifully done. That lovely sound cloud, so good, and both of them telling the story so well. And I just thought I'm as usual, I'm reading it as I'm talking. But I like this particular stanza because that explains everything to me. It's what I always thought it would feel like, this hunger for him, which I cannot sate, this frenzy within me, pure unadulterated lust. His fangs delve deeply into my veins as I palpate, and my body bleeds inflamed as surrender I must. Powerful stuff, very powerful, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you both so much. For sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you? Laurent, you there?
Yeah, I'm on mute again. I took over for Jean. I thought, you know, she's been doing it long enough. Now it's my turn. Give her a break.
That's it. She's laughing so much at me. That's why it's doing it.
No. I just want to take the load off your shoulders. That's all. The juxtaposition of the stanzas, he to the she to the left, he to the right, is really fascinating. It's a great way of breaking things up without going nuts. I'm always amazed at how popular vampire stories, poems, movies are. When the original vampire story was written, it hit a nerve that it just exists to this day. It is always a different way of talking about the vampire and the lure, that magenta look. What is she supposed to, magenta something in the eye, eyes brim with magenta mist. This is a gorgeous phrase. The lust that she has for him, yet the disgust she feels at her own lust. And he wants her to live forever, become immortal, be the slave under his power. It's a great piece. It's kind of refreshing. I like the way it was done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Jean, what about you?
You know, I thought this was fabulous. I love the back and forth thoughts, you know, the almost conversational way it was written, although we know they're not talking to one another. They're talking to us. And I thought that the fabulous imagery and the wording throughout was well done. Yeah, I really love this piece. And I have a feeling that that was Stellina reading all of that. I think that she adjusted her voice on the program as she does. And a lot of people, she says all the time that when she changes to a male voice, that people think it's Arcana, and it makes me laugh. but I think that it was, and I think that she did a fabulous job creating that audio. I really enjoyed it very much. Nice job, Stellina.
Yep. Mm-hmm. As you can see by the picture, it is from the 1992 Bram Stoker's Dracula with Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder, and it delves more deeply into what the book had a lot inferred within it, which was the sexuality of London at the time, at the repressed sexuality that was going on, and how there was a whole lot of repression back then. Proper British society doesn't walk that way yet. It spawned such a book as this by Bram Stoker in 1898, and Stellina's hinting on all that by playing out the parts that were delivered by Oldman and Ryder in the movie itself, which was really done well. And what was it? Something else too. It's an everlasting love story which walks itself within these two figures, which is also another note, as well as the sexual undertones that walk through the whole piece itself. And Bram Stoker used, before he kicked up the writing, he used to work at the Lyceum as a stage manager. So he got to see some of the earlier stuff that was going on, like Jekyll and Hyde back in the 1880s, amongst other plays. So that might have helped him. When it came to the writing himself, he knew what he wanted to elicit and put forth. So, nicely done, Stellina.
No.
All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, Dougie. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Dan DeShino, and he also gave us an audio. So, here we go. There is the piece in the room. And there is the button.
How I long to hear your voice again, to hold you tight, to remember our first lessons, a beacon in the night. Emptiness surrounds me, and there is only emptiness inside. My thoughts, the only enemy. And there is no way to hide. Like an arrow shot rashly and a target across the sea, I sail into a forever void, to an end I cannot see. Endless colors, light from all around, illumination so glorious, so far, not a sound. How I long to hear your voice, again to hold you tight. From a beacon in the night. A dream and yet reality. You are the vision that turns to home. You are the meaning of the flight. You are my beacon in the night. When starlight surrounds, but it's too weak to warm. When the breath of creation sparks an endless empty storm. I look through the heavens for the light beyond all. I listen to silence for a distant, hopeful call. A dream is but a screenplay, and reality but a show. There is nothing in eternity, except for where I must go. How I long to hear your voice, again to hold you tight, driven on a hopeful quest.
Daniel, thank you for the sound card. It's very much appreciated. And Laurent, why don't we start with you?
Beautiful write by Dan. It begins with a really gripping line. Emptiness surrounds me, and there is only emptiness inside. It's empty, surrounded by empty, like a chalk outline you draw around the body, perhaps. I sail into a forever void, to an end I cannot see. Directionless, all around him, those are the colors of illumination. I could see in my mind's eye just like a white fog surrounding him. And the only thing that's going to pull him out of there is the sound of her voice, and she is his beacon in the night, which is something that is repeated at some great effect in the poem. I like the rhyming in this. It's well done. And the line, a dream is but a screenplay, and reality is but a show, implies that there's no real reality at all. And there is nothing in eternity except where I must go. Not a particular place, just forever endless. And you are my beacon in the night. It's a great image, the image of safety for the sailor, safety for the soul, safety for the individual. You look at it in any number of different ways. Very moving piece.
All right. Thank you, Rob. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes. As usual, beautifully written. Bear with me a second. I just hope I'm looking at the right one. Beacon in the night, yeah? Yeah. Endless colors, light from all around, illumination so glorious, so far not a sound. Yeah, this is beautiful. I really enjoyed this so much. Everybody's so sad and everybody's having a horrible time. This is not good. But that last stanza is just a dream and yet reality. You are the vision that turns. You are the meaning of the flight. You are my beacon in the night. As very well put, it really is. We all need that kind of love. And it's wonderful that you get that kind of love that makes you feel that that person is in the world and is in the world to make your life better. So I thought it was a wonderful write. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks. Nicely said, Kate. And now for the second half of the Dueling Mute Buttons. Jean, it's your turn.
That's great.
Okay. I thought this was a great piece by Daniel. And he wrote this for one of Mystic Muses contests, and it was a Rush song, which I thought was kind of intriguing. I like the write. I thought he did a wonderful job with it. Dan has a wonderful way with this type of a write. His thoughts lean into that kind of process. But yeah, I thought it was a lovely write, well penned, and there was many great lines and stanzas in the piece. Started out, when starlight surrounds, but it's too weak to warm, when the breath of creation sparks an endless empty storm. I look through the heavens for the light beyond all. I listen to silence for a distant hope to call. A dream is but a screenplay and a reality but a show. There is nothing in eternity except for where I must go. And I took the next two stanzas after that. I thought it was just beautiful. So wonderful job, Dan. And thanks so much for sharing with us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Sorry, gang. I couldn't resist that little note to the door.
That was good. I liked it. I got to tell you, I think I squeaked through there, Rex. I think I squeaked through because I was on mute.
This was like Hope and Daniel had the same thought in mind and inked themselves to it, and they kept very much to the same angle, playing off her for him and him for her, but separately, so to speak. It's like they were working the same wavelength when they wrote these pieces, because this very much speaks in the very same tone as Hope did, but it walks a different angle. That flight, that long flight, and Hope's was the probably had to do a long flight too, but being far from home as well. And he's got two stems that really walk nicely. How I long to hear your voice again to hold you tight, driven on a hopeful quest from a beacon in the night. A dream and yet reality, you are the vision that turns to home. You are the meaning of the flight. You are my beacon in the night. So nicely done of those notations of being far from home, because you got to do business as you're doing business. And that note of coming home to find that which you're missing most. So nicely done, Daniel. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okie dokie. Hey. This is Dan Fresh. Oh, my gosh. Okay, Kate, the next piece I'm going to put up is for you to read, if you don't mind. It's called Passionless by Weaver of Dreams. So here we go.
Okay. I honestly thought I'd put a SoundCloud in for this. Oh, no. I got to read it. Oh, no. Oh, I'm going to do this so badly. Ah, okay. I will do my best. You think I know my own poem, but no, I don't. I've got a memory like a sieve. Here we go. Passionless. All right. This is all that's left of us. A few red roses. Two empty glasses. I've given you back the bracelet you bought me and the key to your flat. Where did the passion go? That wild desire to rip our clothes off, to taste and savor every inch of skin. I swear I can still feel the weight of you. The stubble on your chin, your lips drifting down my body, driving me to a point where pleasure could so easily turn to the sweetest pain. So we are no longer us. There is now you, me, and her. She doesn't know she will soon be me, looking back as I do and wondering why. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, this walks right up your alley. Short, sweet, and crushing.
I thought this was great, Kate. I really did. I love where you started off, you know, especially with that image. It was perfect. This is all that's left of us. A few red roses, two empty glasses. I've been giving you back the bracelet you bought me and the key to your flat. I thought, you know, that just suited that image so well. You know, and I love the next two stanzas. But then the way you ended it up was just fabulous. So we are no longer us. There is now you, me, and her. She doesn't know she will soon be me, looking back as I do and wondering why. You know, that was really well said at the end. It's like, yep, coming full circle again. I can totally relate. But wonderful, wonderful lines all the way through. Great job. And nice read, too, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Laurent, how about you?
The initial stanza describing the image is well done, because you describe it, Katie, and then you instantly go to "I've given you back the bracelet you bought me and the key to your flat." There's an enormous amount of trust there. You give your lover the key. Basically, you're saying you're married but living in two different places. And, you know, what happens between couples is that the passion does go. A wild desire to rip our clothes off. Maybe you know that person too well. Maybe you've grown tired of them, et cetera. In this particular case, no. He's a philanderer. The last stanza really pulls it together in such a clever way. So we are no longer us. There is now you, me, and her. and she doesn't know she will soon be me. That flipped the whole thing right there for me. I thought that was enormously clever the way she did that. She's going to become her. And maybe extending 2, 3, 4 more times. And you wonder, how did I ever fall for this guy? You know, he turns around and cheats on me, and cheat on her, et cetera. And you do wonder why. It was written with a really vivid simplicity. I don't mean that in any negative way, but there's no embellishment, no unneeded embellishment. It's straight and to the point, and it's perfect. There's not an ounce of fat on this poem at all. Great job, Katie.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
That was a perfect representation. I agree with everything you just said there, Laurent. And I, too, enjoyed that first stanza. Those first two lines was a nice impression of that picture. And the last two offer that note to finality. And then you hit it again with a question in that second stanza. But I like the last line in that fourth for what it offers. I swear I can still feel the weight of you. You can. That was deliberate. It's a double note, not just to the weight of the body itself, but the weight of that which is left imprinted upon your soul and is going to keep doing, as you refer to. She doesn't know how, well, there is now you, me, and her. She doesn't know how she will soon be me, looking back as I do. I'm wondering why. There's a note of brutality in that thought because you've got the secret, so to speak, yet you can't offer it up as a note to be wise, lest you end up as part of the trauma. Because you'd be seen as something else, you have to be quiet. So, even another note to a double thought of something that else is going on. There's a little bit more. You get read between the lines, and it opens up just how tight the situation is. Nicely done.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, well, I was trying to hold off until we got to some carryovers from Wednesday, but it's not going to happen that way. So, Laurent, I'm going to put your piece up next, and this is called Religion of Our Ecstasy. So whenever you're ready.
All right. I had written this for Wednesday's show, The Art of Seduction, but I really was not feeling well that night, so I never got the chance to participate. Religion of Our Ecstasy. How do you know what I want you to do to me? How can you see the shadow inside of me? Shadow that gestures and beckons its desire. Shadow who worships your spiritual fire. I'm a shade, incomplete. I'm always needing you. A shade who can't compete without the sight of you. A shadow lost in the depths of my extremities. A soul torn loose from its anchor, needing remedies. How do you know what I think in my mind alone? How I believe that you sit on an immortal throne. Sexual religion on my knees, now I genuflect. Supplicants whose disease my body can't reject. Lost in the mind maze wrought by a Daedalus. Each turning anticipates your blessing. A light far away grows slowly in intensity, fire burning hotter, signaling your clemency. As you worship with me, the religion of our ecstasy. End quote.
Great time. Read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Kate, we're going to start with you.
Okay, dokie. Yes, I love the two line stanzas. It's always so neat and so it's impactful. And I think this is just one of these another sad story about love and loss and a soul torn loose from its anchor needing remedies. Yeah, that's not a nice feeling, not at all. And a feeling that maybe you can't really do much about it, much as you might want to. you know, we would love to change the past and influence the future, but it takes an awful lot of work. But I do like a light from far away grows slowly in intensity, fire burning hotter, signaling your clemency. So there's hope. That's always good. So yes, I thought it was very well written. And as I say, I do love the two-line stanza. They just intrigue me. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
I think this is a wonderful piece, and I'm not familiar with the song that you penned to. I'm only familiar with the one I put up as a prompt. And I think that, with that being said, I think the piece that I put up for a prompt, I think was well met by this rite itself. You know, this is a little bit deeper than that. This, you know, the other one was supposed to be somewhat playful, and well, I don't know if playful is really the right word for that, but it had a powerful kind of thought in it, all its own. But I think this was a beautiful piece and very well done. It's a very deep and reflective piece, I think, in some ways. So just beautifully written, as always. So nice work.
Thank you, Jean. I like the question to start. How do you know what I want you to do to me? And then you hit on that note in the second two line, the shadow inside of me. Then you hit on that shadow. The shadow gestures and beckons its desire. The shadow worships at your spiritual fire. And then you hit on the idea of the shadow losing a touch of relevance. I'm a shade incomplete, a shade who can't compete without the side of you. And then back into the shadow lost in depths of my extremities. Well, that implies the depth of one's desire there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hit a soul torn loose from its anchor needing remedy. There's a notion of a lost without a port to call home, so to speak. And then again, you offer up the question, how do you know what I think in my mind alone? And offering up that, that you sit on an immortal throne. Then you have the sexual religion on my knees, now a genuflex, a promise of worship, devotion. Now, I did like the next one, lost in the mind maze wrought by a Daedalus. I thought that was perfect considering what you hit in the last couple of lines. I like far away, grows slowly and intensely, fire burning hot is signaling your clemency. As you worship with me, the religion of our ecstasy. The thought of burning so bright that your wings melt in the moment, your wings being the sense of both of you in that moment of sexual religion.
Great comment. Great comment. All of you, great comment. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
You're always back to me. Are you kidding?
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
Keep them donkey rolling.
Rolling, 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 rawhide.
Rawhide.
Oh, my God, you guys.
He was one sexy dude, eh?
What, the donkey?
But they didn't want him in Hollywood.
Clint Eastwood at that age? Jesus, he was gorgeous.
They didn't want him, so he had to go off to Italy to do the spaghetti westerns, and that just set his path alive.
Oh, dear.
I bet you can still remember what it felt like when you saw that movie for the first time, the first spaghetti western with him. It was electrifying.
Yes, they were a little, how was it? They were, because they've kind of slow beat to it, even with the fastness that rolled to it. But it was, he gravitated to that, finally got that note to the Eastwood sneer before it went on to Dirty Harry.
Yeah, you had the spaghetti western going on along with all the James Bond films were hot then too, you know.
Yes.
I like Clint Eastwood just sitting in the chair over there in the corner. He's just fine, like that. I don't need anything in front of him.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Actually, my stepfather looked a lot like Clint Eastwood.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Mm-hmm. My mother was a lucky girl. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So
wow.
Here we go.
Do you remember the two comedies he did?
His who?
Every which way but the two comedies. Every which way but loose.
Oh, yeah,
which way you
Yes, I like
those. Those are great. Those are great. Yeah.
He will have to do a
Let's turn Clyde.
Never work with children and animals. Quite right.
Yeah. Okay, kids, look, we got a half hour left, and I still have, I don't know, 18 pieces of poetry. I'm only kidding. That was an exaggeration. But the next piece I'm going to put up is called The Mask of the Red Death by Titus Llewellyn. And I have an audio.
The Mask of the Red Death. The waltz of unrequited I would dance until no more. A plague it would become, a vague red mist advancing as I glance, a red mask to each beat of the drum. The mask does solemnly swear the distress of heartache, while a curse was to worsen a dance of death for him and his mistress, who unaware it was, and with this person, no one knew, danced until the mask inside so ingrained with what would be the internal bleeding of the heart, the part that now has pained continuously until no more my pleading. Oozing from the lips, the suffering ellipsis, another human being, if seeing is believing how indelible we are, to mark the synopsis, to remove the mask from all our grieving. The lips speak of torment, but not listening, while no attempt at all, it falls on deaf ears. To slip and slide upon the bloody glistening floor, before the dance ends all our fears.
Wonderful read, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It was much appreciated. Kate, what do you think about this?
Well, yes, that's a well-known story, and I don't know by whom. Mask of the Red Death left to dance and dance until they drop. That talking about the dance, that stanza, dance until the mask inside so ingrained with what would be the internal bleeding of the heart, the part that now has pained continuously until no more, my pleading. Ah, yes, it really tells the story so well. I mean, it's the last two lines, to slip and slide upon the bloody glistening floor before the dance end all our fears. So I suppose, yeah, it's there is an ending to it, but it must have been awful. Anyway, yes, I thought it was very well done, very well written. The SoundCloud was excellent. So thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Kate. And Lark, how about you?
Well, I'm hugely impressed by this. The Mask of the Red Death, was that not a short story by Poe, or am I dreaming?
No, you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, all right. I was just, because I looked really quickly in the AN just to see if that was mentioned, but I didn't see it. He has a number of roomy prompts, which is very interesting, given the subject matter and the type of thing that Rumi normally writes. The waltz of unrequited I would dance until no more a plague would become. A vague red mist advancing as I glance, a red mask to each beat of the drum. You know, you get overtones, at least to me, not really of Paul as much as a little bit of Shelley maybe, or Byron. He writes in the classic poetic style using the language that is fallen out of favor, unfortunately. Because it is so expressive, the way the sentences are constructed, almost turned around, as opposed to the way modern English would be used. Great piece.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at the same thing here. You know, I know it's a short story by Poe, and it has all these quotes by Rumi that he's referenced. So I guess his take on the original story, he's actually working in these prompts. And I think it was a nice piece. It was very well written and performed for us all to enjoy. I pulled this, the waltz unrequited I would dance until no more a plague would it would become. A vague red mist advancing as I glance, a red mask to each beat of the drum. I mean, that's just one little stanza out of it all, but they're all very well done and well put together. So thank you so much, Titus, for sharing with us, as always.
Nice. He's done well taking that Poe story and offering up in something a little bit different, because he hits the sort of the plague, and it was the Red Mask of Death was about a plague, a red mist that rolls in and kills everybody. This walks more in the, because he hints in that first stanza, unrequited love I would dance until no more a plague it would become. And also, the master saw me sway the distress of heartache while a curse was to worsen, a dance of death for him and his mistress, who wondered where it was, and with this person, no one knew. The idea is having that dance alone without having love. But the thought of this is how one is required to bleed of heart in order to find that one that offers up a kind of life sentence that you're looking for, so to speak. The lips speak of torment, but not listening, while no attempt at all, it falls on deaf ears to slip or slide upon the bloody glistening floor before the dance ends all our fears. The idea of not finding that one true love that speaks a notion to you that you can spend your wealth of days with before you do move on from this earth. So it is that hunt, that search. But even though you have to bleed along the way. Nicely done, Titus. All right, James, coming your way.
Okay. Actually, I don't know what the hell I just said. I got myself all turned around. Review the next piece for me. There we go. Oh, there it is. Okay, Rex, I got this one up for you next. This is called Summer Tryst by C.L. Howard.
Okay.
And if you read that, I'd appreciate it.
Summer Tryst by C.L. Howard. Long, like naked willow branches kissing the earth, or the icy river weaving its way through our dales, has been our slumber this time around. In the hushed hues of near death, we waited in frozen graves, for the subtle signs of his return, one by one we felt them, gentle, then increased fervor. In moistened heat we drove, we thaw. Screaming in anticipation, we burst from our chambers, leaving the shells of our withered forms behind, hidden from his view. No, he loves his ladies in summer dresses, yellow as the eye that watches. Longingly we stretch, reaching, unfurling arms in brazen desire, yearning for the affection of our lover, he who never stays. Such is the passion of his embrace that all sins are forgiven. With painted faces, we don our sultry silks and perfumes, for we dance before him. He will not die as his touch, his gentle fingers brush against our bodies. Ours is not a fast love, burning up in a moment of passion, but a slow, simmering heat that builds the blinding bliss. As his caress we tremble, enjoying the strength of his hands. Day and night we dance, with each moment bleeding into the next. Ecstasy beyond ecstasy, building toward our climatic release. The field abuzz with our desires, as the nature of life is fulfilled. Our energy spent, silken yellows melt into cotton fingers. With one voice we whisper our deepest desire, take me. Angelically we leap to perform our final tour, L'Affaire. Suddenly, with a strength and passion not yet felt, he comes, catching us up in his arms, spinning us about, lifting us beyond the mortal plane. Tenderly, lovingly, we sigh. The watchful eye withdraws. He knows our affair short-lived. Softly we ask our loving, is it time? He whispers, soon, my love. Slowly, gently, he kneels, we in his arms. Rest here, he coos, till once again I return to you. Weakly, leaning into his touch one last time, we lay upon the ground. With saddened smile, he covers our eyes with ease, and we sleep. We'll dream of days spent dancing in our yellows and our greens, as we lie in autumn's bed, wrapped in winter's blankets, until our lover comes once more, and our summer tryst is reborn. End poem. And Rob, why don't we start with you?
And CL knows that right, doesn't he? This has puzzled me for a little while. One could see the emergence of a flower of some kind. And I thought that the way it was presented was absolutely fascinating. You know, it was really well personified, and you could almost imagine that it was some kind of a strange being. And, well, in reality, it I believe, is a flower. And I thought the lover was someone who would come and pick them. That didn't make a whole lot of sense, given how it was written. And then I had to cheat, and I went down, and I saw that it was the wind. And from that point of view, and after that point, it began to make all kinds of sense. And I could really, really enjoy the way he wrote. For instance, ours is not a fast love, burning up in a moment of passion, but a slow simmering heat that builds to blinding bliss. At his caress we tremble, enjoying the strength of his hands. And if you read it literally, it has nothing to do with wind, but if you understand it, it's wind. Wow. You can appreciate the beauty of the metaphor and the way it was written, and that goes for every stanza in this. Excellent, excellent, excellent.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Katie, how about you?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful, so lyrical and so interesting. Anything to do with the wind makes me happy. There's something about it that's so magical. You don't see it, but you see where it's been and you see where it's going. And it can be powerful and it can be languid and warm and balmy. So it's a whole natural, beautiful thing. And this is a lovely rite to it. Yep. Sorry, yes. I'm just so engrossed in it. It's just lovely. So I'm going to read this again later, but I think it was a wonderful job. Very well done. Thank you so much.
Nice. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
Oh, I thought this was wonderful. I really did. I love the whole story that was told here, personification of, I believe, autumn is really what it is. I know it mentions summer tryst. But at the end of that tryst, you get into the watchful eye withdraws. He knows our affair short-lived. Softly we ask our lover the time. He whispers, soon, my love. Slowly, gently, he kneels, we in his arms. Rest here, he coos, so once again I return for you. So maybe it's not. Maybe this summer. Actions in that stanza lead me to think autumn, but it would be, I guess, the end of summer. And it's just beautifully, beautifully done. I thought it was clever and just well put together. So, CL, this was great, and I want to thank you so much for putting it on the board for tonight, really. And I'm glad I got to it, most definitely.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. This great language is the thought of the graves being the soil to be slept in. That purchase of winter, which keeps everything still fertile, yet frozen in state, so to speak. That thought where he's got it in, where it's here it is. No, he loves his ladies in summer dresses, yellow as the eye that watches. The notation there is first birth of spring, the daffodils awaiting the prim and prettiness that is offered there, and yellow as the eye that watches. The sun. So the warm fingers that touch is that the note of first spring, where the sun bleeds into the ground to get those first flowers, which are usually the daffodils, and they are the unfurling arms and brazen desire yearning for the affection of our lover. A great note to how nature works its way as the passing of one season to the next, and you see that unfurling. You see that note to growth, and then all of a sudden you get this bloom of yellow or bloom of yellow with some white fringe, so you've got a nice little display of color, and they do work their way as dresses. So, CL, wonderful piece, enjoyable, and a great way to introduce spring, walking into that summer. So, nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dean, we're back to you.
Yeah, well, 19 pieces left. It's okay. We're good. We're good. I'm just kidding. But we do need about 10, I think. So I don't know. They're multiplying. But Rex is not Rex. You're not. No. I want Katie, not Rex. They sound so much alike. Kate, can I get you to read this next one for me by L.G. Mace?
Yes, of course. No problem. I just like the idea that I sound like Rex. I'm thinking of my name. Oh, there. Howdy, baby, howdy. Okay. Serious face. Nights of a Bermuda dune. Uh-huh. The last summer my mother was alive, she took my sister and I, little knowing that January she'd fall ill and die for 2 weeks in Bermuda as a special vacation treat. We left the coolness of Montreal, miraculously flew through the Bermuda Triangle to come out on the airport's asphalt, sweltering in the tropical sun's heat. We were taken to our own private cottage, perched high up on its own secluded hill, to cool off and relax in the mild night's chill. The night was calmingly quiet, except for the pounding of the surf on the coral and the pumice rocks below. Standing on our own private patio, to be intoxicated by the exotic perfume of passion flower and night-blowing jasmine. Our senses did giddily go. In the morning, the waters below our cottage were so clear, we could see the parrotfish feeding in the waters of turquoise. Out further, red coral and emerald green. On the horizon, galleon ships and sails unfurled, and little skiffs floating like bobbing corks. The nautical activities quite set the scene. The sands of our own private beach, a whole mile long, were duned with sweeps of sand as white as winter snow. And the SOS steel bands played the reggae-like music, accompanied by happy voiced sang their Bermudan song. The 2 weeks passed too quickly, fishing, dining, and sailing too, enjoying all the activities, especially the seas of Bermuda's turquoise blue. And on the last night, watched the clear of a million diamonds sparkle in the heavens as shooting stars shot across the celestial sky. I was touched by so much awe and beauty. A teardrop found itself into my eye. The exquisite beauty of a perfect tropical evening, the only light, the effervescence of the full moon, leaving me with the memories of the nights of a Bermuda dune. End poem.
Yeah. Great read, Katie. Thank you very much. And Jean, start with you.
You know, I thought this was just a wonderful memory shared in this piece. Imagery was great all the way through. And what a story. It's sad, you know, but at least you always have these memories, these fond memories. As before her mother passed. And I think that is, you know, that's a lot. Yeah, that's important because it's something to hold on to and to treasure. So, LG, I thought you did a great job with this piece, very well described and stated. So nice work, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
You know, she really describes very well the feeling of being on a beach on an island, which really feels much, much different for some reason than being on a beach on a continent. You know you're surrounded by water. Things move differently. And the rooms they give you, as she describes it, standing at her own private patio to be intoxicated by the exotic perfume of passion flower and night blooming jasmine, our senses did giddily go. The aroma, the perfume of a flower that you're not used to smelling, especially when you're surrounded by it, adds to the beautiful waters that surround you, the crystal clear skies, the white sand, the red coral, the emerald green that she describes. And I love a bit on the horizon galleon ship's sails unfurled and little skiffs floating like bobbing corks. The nautical activities quite set the scene. There's an island, of course, there's boats everywhere. Otherwise, you're not getting off. I enjoyed this a great deal.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurel. Katie, you got to read it. How about you?
That was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. It just, I mean, apart from the fact that it was so terribly sad, it was lovely to have that 2 weeks to remember. You know, it's, memories can help a lot. I mean, they also hurt, but they can help. And that sounds like it would have been a lovely, relaxing 2 weeks in that wonderful, quiet, calm nights and hot mornings and days. So, yeah, lovely. I just, very sad, but beautifully written. I mean, everything was there that, you know, you want to know about a holiday and about people's relationships. But, yeah, mm-hmm. It sounded as if it was a lovely way to then look back. And, you know, that's good. So thank you for sharing.
Excellent. Thing with vacations, everybody takes vacations. And to a degree, most of what you do within the vacation, except the maybe some special things, are lost over time. But this is so clean, so crisp and crystal clear because of that note up front that last summer my mother was alive. And the note to she fell sick the following January. So this holds a special moment because it sings with those 2 weeks down here in Bermuda that you hold that memory for all it's worth because she was supremely happy in that moment with the family around on this vacation. So everything sinks within mind with clarity and holds itself there because it was the last one they had together. And therefore, it is a memory that sings easily within the mind. You look back on it fondly within the details itself. So nicely done, LG. Thank you. All right, Jane.
Okay, and Laurent, I have the last piece I'm going to put up and ask you to read. And this is by Jack Blue, called Lyric of Lucy Lilac's Walk.
Okay. Lyric of Lucy Lilac, number one. A river flows bright through my shabby home when a drunken sprite enchants all the dome. Little stars twinkle on the rosemary and play the periwinkle gracefully for Mary. The jazzy jewels stream inside my looking glass, where fairies dream whirls around the grass. Her shadows idly swim through the starry trees and sail the land of Grimm in the bluish breeze. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, start with you.
You do it every time, Rex. Every time. I thought this was a nice piece by Jack Blue. You know, it's short, but a lot of his pieces are. But I think his imagery is nice. A river flows bright through my shabby home when a drunken sprite enchants all the zone. Little stars twinkle on the rosemary and play the periwinkle gracefully for Mary. It's cute. It's cute. It has cute imagery. It reminds me of a child's poem or a child's little storyline, something you would read to them, you know, a little girl, you know, dreaming about fairies and unicorns and all that. And I think that it has a lot of merit in that respect. So nicely done, Jack, and thanks for sharing with us, as always. and I see it was inspired by a piece by Garden of the Lake. So that's not hard to do because Garden of the Lake has given us a little piece of it as well. Yes, she does. So that's my job.
Thank you, Jean. Katie, how about you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was very cute. This drunken sprite interests me very much. Enchanting all the dome. Wonder what that's about. But it was just beautifully written. And my mind goes, you know, what's a sprite been drinking and why is being allowed to drink? Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Good.
Yeah, of course, I've written about my little fairy who drank nectar and with the abuse of the people. Don't drink nectar, it's bad for you. The Jazzy Joe's stream inside my looking glass where a fairy dream rolls around the grass. That's just lovely. I like this a lot. Apart from Sail the Land of Grimm, because the Grimm stories are pretty grim, you know. There's an awful lot of lightness about them. Yes, very nice, Jack Blue. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. And Rob, you got to read it. How about you?
It's an intriguing little piece. It's charming. Cute, yes, if you wish. Let me go to the last stanza. Shadows Island swim through the starry trees and sail the land of Grimm in the bluish breeze. To me, that's a reference to the Brothers Grimm, the fairy tales. And if you work backwards, it's almost like the river that's flowing brights my shabby home. And maybe literature, maybe the fairy tales, maybe wonderful stories. Because that would kind of fit with the tenor of the poem. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Absolutely. This does impart the note for children's stories, at least not a story full on, but a tale that you could read to a kid and somewhere down the line they offer up a little bit more context to it. Because the thought I suppose drank through my shabby home. So obviously part of the fairy world too. The shabby home might be the flower that is part of the home at the moment because it hits on that note, enchants all the domes. So the center of the flower's got a nice little dome in it. Then the twinkle of the stars on the rosemary and play the periwinkle gracefully for Mary. The jazzy jewels stream inside my looking glass. Kind of hits on the idea of viewing from a different point, so to speak, where a fairy's dream rolls around the grass. Nice little note from the dew that grows on the grass. And I did like that last stanza. It hits on something a little bit in the dreamlike angle of things. Her shadows oddly swim through the starry trees and sail on the land of Grimm in the bluish breeze. Hey, we all have to walk tread, so when you dream, you might pick up a little Grimm, but still notate, hey, it might be because of the nectar you've been drinking on. Nicely done, Jack. All right, Jean, back to you for closing.
Yes, time to close. I think we only have like 30 seconds left, which is wonderful. We have 7 carryovers, and I'm moving them on to next Friday's topic board right from the beginning. They will be starting the show. So we're going to start out with the Frisky Friday next Friday. And maybe a little extra, too, but we definitely have, I think, 4 from Wednesday. So I apologize to anyone who was listening to hear the work from last Wednesday, but it just wasn't making it. So I apologize for that. In the meantime, it's a wonderful, wonderful night of poetry. And thank you, Laurent. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Rex, as always, for calling and staying with me. And what a great night. I enjoyed it very much. I hope everyone else did as well.
Great show.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, my dear.
Everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, hon.